Martha passed the cassette player from one hand to the other. I quite like this old thing. I'm sure you've got a long career as a reporter ahead of you, Rose said. You think? Rose nodded. Like I said before, you remind me a lot of myself at your age. I'll take that as a compliment. Silence for a moment between them. Rose coughed and held her side, winced. How are you and Elaine? She said. How do you mean? Don't be too hard on her, Martha. She did what she thought was best for her children. You think? She loves you, and she brought you up okay, didn't she? Martha didn't speak. She could feel Rose examining her closely. Billy told me where you were this morning, Rose said. Martha raised her eyebrows. And? Does it work? Martha nodded. Yeah, it works. Good. Martha got up to leave, the Walkman still in her hand. Rose put a hand out. Look after Billy for me, will you? Martha smiled. He's perfectly capable of looking after himself. Nevertheless, look out for him. I will, Rose. She took Rose's hand, a firm grip. You take it easy now, you hear? Rose coughed out a laugh. I'll try. Chapter 52. Her whole body felt shaky as she got off the bus. Was she just picking at the scab? Or was this some half-baked idea about closure? Northbridge was busy. Rush hour on a Friday, everyone keen to get somewhere. She felt like a twig in a stream, swaying under the influence of everyone around her. She had her earphones in, listening to another of Ian's cassettes. She looked at the box. It was the B-side of the very first tape she'd listened to on the way to the Standard offices. That was the Lemonheads. This time, the Breeders. Last Splash. Sounded weird, but cool. Two women singing about a cannonball. She crossed the road to the east side of the bridge, saw the Samaritan sign, the same one from before. Who cares? We do. We don't. She walked to the exact spot. Put her hands on the wall. Felt the rough stone under her fingers. Rubbed her hands up and down lightly. She leaned over and looked down at Platform 8. Busy with commuters, weekend travellers, people heading all sorts of places, away from here. She thought about that. The sun was behind her, casting her shadow onto the stone of the bridge. She looked out to sea, just calm blue, a couple of oil tankers seemingly still. Then she looked at Calton Hill to the left, lit up in the afternoon sunshine. The Breeders were creepy now in her ears, like it was recorded underwater. She caught a line. Raw, where the shot leaves me gagging for the arrow. She turned and walked down the bridge, turned right at the junction and up Waterloo Place. Her stride quickened as she went. Took the turning up Calton Hill, through the trees, along the path, bending round and up. She reached the top, out of breath, panting, and turned. From here, you could see all the way down Princes Street to the castle and past it to the Pentlands. Thousands of people going about their normal day, carrying all the stuff around with them that folk did, each with their story to tell, each one as insignificant as the rest, each one just as important. Northbridge looked like a little model, toy cars and buses shunting up and down. The distance from Northbridge down to the train platform below looked like nothing, like jumping off a garden wall. Perspective. The Breeders were playing I Just Want to Get Along in her ears, chugging surf rock. They sounded like a fun band to have a beer with. She sat down, opened her bag, pulled the laptop out and opened it on her knees, powered it up, looked at the clouds while she waited, then opened a new document and began typing. Obituary, Martha Fluke. Born 14th of April 1993 in Edinburgh. died? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, 2000 and question mark, question mark, in, question mark, question mark, aged, question mark, question mark. Martha Fluke was a highly accomplished and greatly admired journalist. She was born in Edinburgh and studied journalism at Napier University before going on to... She took a deep breath and looked away from the screen. Her mind was blank. She tried to imagine what kind of life she might have, the kind of things a decent obituary writer would put in. She couldn't. She clicked on word count. 25 words so far. That was all she could think of for 20 years of life. Even for a short piece, how would she fill the other 275 words? She saved the file, closed the screen and stared at Northbridge way down below, feeling the sun on her face. Chapter 53. She scanned the trees looking for her wood pigeon, or the cat that had brought her the offering before. Nothing. The cemetery was busy. Gordon had more friends than anyone had realised. Martha thought about the 300-word obituary they ran yesterday. How many words did it take to sum up a life? Everyone from the office was here, except for Rose, still recovering in hospital. V looked amazing in a tight trouser suit, high heels and a faded Aerosmith t-shirt under her jacket. Well, at least it was black. She gave Martha a wink from the other side of the grave. Martha put her arm through Billy's and rested her head on his shoulder. It seemed like the ECT yesterday had been a success. She still felt great today, far too good to be at a funeral. She almost felt like dancing among the tombstones. The minister was talking, but Martha wasn't listening. She looked at all the faces around the grave, thought about the impact Gordon Harris had made with his short time on Earth. Tiny, really, like any of us. But not nothing. That was the main thing. Sam was sobbing, face puffy, looking afraid and desperate. Martha wondered what she would be like at her own husband's funeral, if she ever had a husband. Or at Cal's funeral. Or Elaine's. The tears came. Not for Gordon, or Ian, or Johnny. Not for the thought of Cal or Elaine. But for herself. And for everyone else on the planet, trudging along in their day-to-day existence, quietly, heroically living the best life they could manage for as long as they were here. Billy hugged her closer and squeezed her arm as they lowered the coffin into the ground. Martha remembered Gordon's face half missing, putting her hand on the carpet soaked in his piss, the ride in the ambulance. Sam threw a handful of dirt on the coffin, then her legs buckled and she sank to her knees. She was helped up by an older man and led away. That was the signal for everyone else to break. Martha wiped at her cheeks and looked up at Billy, kissed him on the lips. She turned him away from the graveside and began walking. She wanted to show him. 100 yards away, she stopped at Ian's grave, looked around again for the wood pigeon. Nothing. The grass seed still hadn't taken in the soil. She wondered if it would.
"So, this is Ian," Billy said.
"Yeah," Martha had a thought. "Will they dig him up?" Billy looked at her.
"Why would they do that?"
"Forensics. Maybe they can tell whether he jumped or whether Johnny forced him over somehow."
"Wouldn't they have already done a post-mortem?"
Martha shook her head. "It's not standard for suicides."
"If it was suicide."
"Exactly." Elaine and Cal joined them at the grave. Elaine's eyes were red and she was sniffing into a tissue.
"I don't know why I'm crying. I hadn't seen Gordon in 2 decades.
Martha nodded at Ian's grave. "Well, they put Johnny next to him." Elaine shrugged.
"Do you think they should?"
"I don't suppose it matters." Cal looked at Elaine, then turned to Martha.
"We've got some news."
"Yeah?"
"The fire service forensic team have submitted their report."
Martha closed her eyes, pictured the living room as it used to be.
And?
Cause of fire is undetermined. Martha opened her eyes again.
What does that mean?
Elaine spoke.
It means they don't know why it happened, whether it was an accident or whether Johnny did it.
More importantly, Cal said, it means the insurance will pay out, so we'll have our home back eventually.
Martha thought about that. She didn't know if she wanted it back.
Look!
It was V striding towards them, McNeil in her wake. V walked up and gave Martha a hug.
Hey, kiddo.
She broke away and did the same to Billy, then spoke under her breath to both of them, pointing at McNeil behind her.
Bugger Lugs here has some interesting chat for you, pair. Be cool.
Martha, McNeil said. Billy.
He looked over his shoulder.
A sad business.
He turned back, shuffled his feet a little.
Virginia has been filling me in on what you have been up to.
Martha held on to Billy's arm.
Rose has handed in her notice, McNeil said.
What? Billy said.
I've refused it, of course. Still trying to talk her out. Think she just needs some time off.
He waved his hand around the graveyard.
Anyway, I'll hold her job open as long as she wants, but I need someone to cover for her, which is where you come in. We also, of course, have a permanent vacancy on the obituary desk, if either of you are interested in that.
He harumphed and rubbed his hands.
So, that's it. There are two jobs going, crime reporter and obituary writer. You can take your pick between you. Either way, see you both in the office on Monday, yes?
V smiled.
Well?
Martha and Billy looked at each other for a long time.
I don't mind, Billy said, holding his hands out.
Martha looked past him, at the hundreds of graves, hundreds of lives, hundreds of stories that deserved to be told. Sunlight snuck through the oak trees, and she spotted something up there amongst the branches. Her wood pigeon, ruffling its feathers, face turned upwards, soaking up the warmth. She looked at Billy and smiled.
I'll take the deadbeat, she said.
That was The Deadbeat by Doug Johnston, read by Caroline Guthrie.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.